We the People t-shirts, where freedom is always in style. Famous quotes from patriots throughout U.S. history printed on the back of our t-shirts. We do over 25 quotes in a variety of colors. High-quality t-shirts with a meaningful message that make people think. Encourage others by reminding them about patriots of conviction who have gone before us. Order directly from wethepeopletshirts.us. For more information, call 757-645-8878.
Hi, I'm Hans Tenbaum with Valley Forge PC Repair. I offer affordable and expert computer repair services. Deal with a locally owned business who cares more about their clients' needs. The services provided include virus removal, repair, cleanups, tune-ups, tutoring, consulting, and other computer services. Most services can be done at a flat rate. Senior citizens mentioned WFIL receive a 10% discount. Call me at 610-462-3210 for more information.
ShopRite of Hatfield is American-owned, locally operated grocer. We support veterans and seniors by giving 5% discounts. Just bring in your ID. Download the ShopRite mobile app to enjoy weekly savings, coupons, recipes, and so much more. ShopRite of Hatfield, 170 40-foot road, open 7 days a week, 7 a.m. to 11 p.m.
ShopRite, we're all about food, savings, and you.
Good morning, Valley Forge, and welcome to We the People, the Constitution Matters. I'm your host, Gary Porter, Executive Director of the Constitution Leadership Initiative. Today I have with me our regular contributors, Mr. Phil Duffy, Instructor of the Constitution at the Osher Lifelong Learning Institute, and Pastor David Whitney, Senior Instructor at the Institute on the Constitution. We'll be joined at the mid-break by a guest, special guest from the 10th Amendment Center. Now, last week, we bravely ventured into the explosive topic of an Article 5 convention. It's a topic that splits conservatives right down the middle and has ruined many a good friendship. But the issue is, how do you rein in a too powerful central government? How do you put a stop to Washington running roughshod over limits the Constitution was designed to place on its powers, its enumerated powers? How do you convince Washington to stop micromanaging every aspect of our private lives? Is there any one best way, or should a variety of remedies be employed? During last week's discussion, one of our very first call-ins to this show suggested that instead of an Article 5 convention of the states, we should employ nullification. So we're going to look at that today. What is nullification, and is it a proper remedy to federal overreach? That's what we hope to explore. Well, hear first from Pastor David Whitney, who will show us how the idea of nullification came to the forefront in this country, what sparked two of our most famous founders to ghostwrite two seminal documents on this topic, and where does the doctrine of nullification come from? Is it a totally contrived idea, or does it find its roots in natural law? And next we'll hear from, again, our regular commentator, Phil Duffy, who will fill in some of the details of how nullification has been employed since the excitement over the Sedition Act of 1798. Now, I want to point out there are several good books on the market on this topic. If you're curious, Tom Wood's book, Nullification, How to Resist Federal Tyranny in the 21st Century, is a fine place to start. I can also recommend Reclaiming the American Revolution, the Kentucky and Virginia Resolutions and Their Legacy, written by William Watkins, and Gateway to Liberty, The Constitutional Power of the 10th Amendment by Dr. Archie P. Jones. Now, let me pause here to remind our listeners that whether you're hearing this over radio or over the Internet, you can call in with your questions at any time during the show. The call-in number is 610-539-TALK. That's 610-539-8255. And the very first caller of the morning is going to receive in the mail a free pocket constitution. Just give us your name and a mail address, and we'll see that you get that. Now, if the lines are busy, you can also email us your question by sending it to info@1180wfyl.com. Now, be sure to include your mailing address when you send us that email. We'll have someone monitoring email throughout the show. I'd also like to thank our sponsors, Valley Forge PC Repair and ShopRite, for making this the shortest hour of my life possible. So let's get started. David, tell us what nullification amounts to and how the idea first took root in this country.
Yes, when we consider what our founders designed in this constitutional republic, one of the things that's easy to forget is that they designed a balance of powers between the federal and state government, in which the state government actually had the larger share of the powers. And just read Madison's Federalist Paper 45, last three paragraphs, where he spells that out very clearly. So the whole idea of nullification is largely rejected by a wide number of people today as being unworkable, and for many as being illegal. That is, they think it is contrary to what our founders designed. But the first statement of nullification really is our Declaration of Independence. It was stating that what the king passed was pretended legislation. Now, to say pretended legislation is an interesting idea, because that means there's a standard beyond the king, and in this case beyond the parliament, to which the king and parliament have to adhere. And the entire argument of the Declaration of Independence is that the king was violating that standard, which was clearly stated is the laws of nature and nature's God, which we know refers directly to the Bible and to human conscience, human reason, as given to everyone that is made in his image. So our founders began our entire endeavor as a constitutional government on the whole idea, the principle of nullification, when the civil government acts outside of its God-ordained authority, or, in addition to that, when the civil government acts outside of the legal binding documents on that civil government. And for the king, that was Magna Carta, which we just celebrated the 800th anniversary of Magna Carta. In addition to Magna Carta was the Englishman's Bill of Rights, again specifying what the king could do, what he could not do, and what rights the people had. So those are the background from which the whole discussion about nullification should be held. And therefore, when we come to our Constitution, we have to say, is there a higher standard by which any law passed, quote-unquote passed by Congress, is to be evaluated? And the answer is yes. First of all, the standard of the laws of nature and nature's God, does it comply with what the God who created this universe, his law, because his law is supreme. And, of course, beneath the supremacy of the universal law, God's law, is our Constitution itself. And Article 6 declares that it is the supreme law of the land. And most tellingly, it says, any laws made in pursuance of this Constitution, that is, the laws that are truly constitutional, those laws as well are the supreme law of the land. So it immediately sets up the standard by which the government, both at all levels, I want to argue in a moment here, at all levels, must evaluate every piece of legislation to discover if it is truly constitutional, if it is the supreme law, or if it is unconstitutional, and therefore not the supreme law. And the big debate erupted early in the history of our country over the Alien and Sedition Acts, which I think any reading of them will clearly demonstrate it's a violation of the Bill of Rights in a number of serious ways. And so Thomas Jefferson wrote for the state legislature of Kentucky a response to that Alien Sedition Act. And let me just read the first resolve of that, that the several states composing the United States of America are not united on the principle of unlimited submission to their general government. By general government, of course, they were referring to the federal government. So we're not united on unlimited submission to the general government, but that by compact under the style and title of a constitution for the United States and of amendments thereto, they constituted a general government for special purposes, delegated to that government certain definite powers, reserving each state to itself the residuary mass of right to their own self-government. So in other words, we didn't surrender our sovereignty as states. In fact, we didn't surrender anything in joining the Constitution. We only said the federal government is going to have certain limited, enumerated, delegated powers and the rest of the powers are reserved to the states. So whenever the federal government steps over that boundary and violates what is constitutional, there is a duty on the part of governments and local governments to interpose to say, no, this is not law. You do not have power in that area. And that's essentially what nullification does accomplish. It's not easy to accomplish because it's obviously it's only one state doing this out of 50 states. And it's not easy to push back a tyrannical, gargantuan federal government in this day that has vast controls. And literally that government today, the federal government, bribes the state governments with money so that the state governments will surrender its sovereign powers and no longer protect the God-given rights of the people within the boundaries of their territory. So nullification is from the very beginning an American idea and is very part of what we are made of. And it is the duty, because every official, whether state or county or even local, swears an oath to uphold the Constitution, which means if any powers above them, federal or state, are violative of the Constitution, that elected official has a duty. They are duty-bound before God to resist all violations of the Constitution in the area of jurisdiction they have. So the sheriff, for example, he's duty-bound to resist violations. Oh, let's just pick one of the Second Amendment, for example, so that in his jurisdiction, if the federal government or the state government desires to violate the Second Amendment, he is to nullify that, say, that's not law. The Second Amendment is the law, and I will not permit within my jurisdiction violations of the Second Amendment. So nullification is a wide-ranging idea that goes beyond just even the legislative branch, that the executive branch, in a sense, is also involved in recognizing that unlaw, that is law that's not constitutional, law that's in violation of the laws of nature and nature's God, that it is not law at all, and to treat it as not law.
Well, thanks for that great rundown, David. That really puts things in perspective. I'd like to turn now to Phil Duffy, instructor of the Constitution at the Osher Lifelong Learning Institute. Phil, what is your take on nullification, and can you maybe bring it a little more forward in time, what happened after the nullification crisis of 1798?
I think a way to kind of reveal my feelings, which are identical to some feelings that Thomas E. Woods has expressed in a book that's conveniently called Nullification. It's a 263-page guide written in 2010 on the subject. Perhaps if I can just cover some of the comments that he has made, and I think this might add and give you a perspective on where I'm coming from. The book opens very, very interestingly about the issue of bipartisanship. Is this a bipartisan issue or just a specifically partisan issue? And Woods talks about Nancy Pelosi's comment upon the passage of the Affordable Care Act, where she's questioned by a reporter who says, "Where do you find this in the Constitution?" And she responds, "Are you serious? The Constitution? Why does that matter?" kind of thing, you know. And then he immediately goes on to the bailouts. So, you know, the first is the Democratic side, if you will, and then we have the bailouts. And since I was involved in this personally, I realized that this was a matter of Congress going off on its own, disregarding the will of the people, obviously. The responses that I was getting were something around 80%, and I checked that with a local congressman, and that's what he was getting. 80% of the people were against the bailouts. And so, nonetheless, they went ahead. And so Woods' point is that here are two clear examples of both parties having contempt for the Constitution. And, you know, what is the necessary way to respond to that? As David's pointed out, it's not to fold your cards and simply walk away from the table. It's to resist in some way. And so we see that state interposition, if you will, or nullification is the Jeffersonian and Madison answer to the overreach of the federal government. This is a matter of human nature, if you will. People who are in the federal government desire to retain power and increase it. And so there must be some kind of counterbalance here, some countervailing power. So the central point is that the federal government cannot be permitted to hold a monopoly on constitutional interpretation. There's nothing in the Constitution that suggests that, and nothing in the Federalist Papers that suggests that in any way. And in fact, Alexander Hamilton in the Federalist Number 78 says, and Hamilton is notoriously the most central government guy, if you will, and he says, every act of delegated authority contrary to the tenor of the commission under which it is exercised is void. So this is the guy who is for a central government, and he's saying clearly at the beginning, no, if the central government acts contrary to the Constitution matters. So there's a question, I think, about does nullification violate the Constitution Supremacy Clause? And no, it doesn't, because the Constitution and not the federal Supreme Court is the supreme law of the land. So there was initial sympathy for nullification, which is a product of the public sense that Washington, D.C. is where the least responsive level of government is located. And we've seen so many examples of that, it's pretty obvious that there must be this countervailing power.
I agree with you totally. But I should point out that even in 1798, when Jefferson and Madison wrote their Kentucky and Virginia resolves, there was great pushback by the other states at the time, which were controlled by Federalists, who thought this was a totally unconstitutional act. How do you deal with states that think that this is improper and totally inappropriate?
Well, that's an interesting point, because the states that notoriously pushed back were the New England states, and so you kind of get this feeling early on that this is the New England and Eastern establishment versus the Southern, and later on it gets associated with slavery. But the issue of nullification really was subsequently adopted by the New England states, which is very, very curious. There was something called the Hartford Convention in which the issue was raised. But beyond the Hartford Convention, there are other actual nullifications that occur in the New England states. And, for example, I think both Connecticut and Massachusetts were involved in Connecticut and Rhode Island, passed resolutions of nullification. And interestingly, and Woods brings this out in his book, both Massachusetts and Connecticut refused to turn over the militia in the War of 1812 over the, you know, and that was a nullification issue.
Well, that's interesting. And you mentioned slavery. We should bring up the Fugitive Slave Act, which was a great catalyst for nullification of in the northern states, and produced the only Supreme Court decision that I know of that really has addressed this, which was Appleman versus Appleman versus Booth in 1859. Unfortunately for the supporters of nullification, the Supreme Court said in that case that it was improper for a state to nullify the Fugitive Slave Act. So you have this give and take between the federal government and the states as to where the proper line is, and are we ever going to resolve that?
Woods has a significant section of the book dedicated to that issue of the Fugitive Slave Act, and he particularly talks about an example in Wisconsin where the principles of 1798 were invoked. Now, this is Wisconsin recognizing that a slave who was on free soil, Joshua Glover, was being repatriated, if you will, to the South, to his owner, and he was thrown in jail. And a couple of things happen, some of which are nullification and some of which are just outright civil disobedience. And as a result of that, the first thing that happened was that the mob went in and broke into the jail and freed him. And then there were a whole series of actions in which ultimately culminate in the legislature for Wisconsin passing acts of nullification, saying we are going to disregard federal law. So it's not a southern thing.
Well, that definitely not just a southern thing. It's just, it really depends on the issue and where you find support or opposition to that particular issue. So as issues change, the dynamics of nullification have changed, as we've seen over our country's history. The South, in fact, tried to nullify the abominable tariffs in the early 1800s, and that, you know, that produced another nullification crisis, if you will. Well, we're about to head into a break. When we come back from this break, we should find ourselves talking with a representative of the 10th Amendment Center. David mentioned the 10th Amendment as being the basis for this nullification idea, and when we come back, we should be able to hear how that 10th Amendment really is the root of nullification. Well, stay tuned. We'll be right back after these commercial breaks and be with you momentarily.
Kings or Parliament could not give the rights essential to happiness. We claim them from a higher source, from the King of Kings and Lord of all the earth. They are not annexed to us by parchments and seals. They are created in us by the decrees of Providence, which established the law of our nature. They are born with us, exist with us, and cannot be taken from us by any human power without taking our lives. A quote from John Dickinson, 1804.
We the People t-shirts, where freedom is always in style. Famous quotes from patriots throughout U.S. history printed on the back of our t-shirts. We do over 25 quotes in a variety of colors. High quality t-shirts with a meaningful message that make people think. Encourage others by reminding them about patriots of conviction who have gone before us. Order directly from wethepeopletshirts.us. For more information, call 757-645-8878.
A government of laws and not of men. John Adams, 1774.
Hey, Grandma, can you help me with my Common Core lesson on the Constitution? I know you always said how important it is, but the only part we're reading in eighth grade is the preamble and the First Amendment. I wonder when we'll get to study the rest of it. Didn't you say our founding fathers were wise patriots and wrote the Constitution and the Bill of Rights to protect our freedom? This Common Core book we're reading by Linda Monk says our founding fathers were racist and they didn't think women or blacks should ever be allowed to vote. She says, we the people didn't really mean you and me, but some rich white guys. That just makes me feel terrible about our country. We need to change things.
Oh, honey, that's not true at all. Our country is the greatest country the world has ever seen, and our founding fathers worked hard to be fair to everyone. I'm going to call our school board and our state board of education and ask why they allow Common Core and this book in your school.
Call your representatives now and ask them to stop Common Core and restore local control. Pennsylvanians for Restoring Education brought you this message. Go to parestoringeducation.org or call 484-678-2236.
The Constitution preserves the advantage of being armed, which Americans possess over the people of almost every other nation, where the governments are afraid to trust the people with arms. A quote from James Madison.
Hi, I'm Hans Tenbaum with Valley Forge PC Repair. I offer affordable and expert computer repair services. Deal with a locally owned business who cares more about their clients' needs. The services provided include virus removal, repair, cleanups, tune-ups, tutoring, consulting, and other computer services. Most services can be done at a flat rate. Senior citizens mentioned WFIL receive a 10% discount. Call me at 610-462-3210 for more information.
ShopRite of Hatfield is American-owned, locally operated grocer. We support veterans and seniors by giving 5% discounts. Just bring in your ID. Download the ShopRite mobile app to enjoy weekly savings, coupons, recipes, and so much more. ShopRite of Hatfield, 170 40-foot road, open 7 days a week, 7 a.m. to 11 p.m.
ShopRite, we're all about food, savings, and you.
Welcome back to We the People, the Constitution Matters. I'm your host, Gary Porter, Executive Director of the Constitutional Leadership Initiative. And we were expecting Mr. Ben Lewis of the 10th Amendment Center to call in on the break, and I don't see him on our call-in board yet. But I do want to remind our listeners that they can call in at any time to ask a question or challenge something that one of our commentators has said, and that call-in number is 610-539-TALK, 610-539-8255. And I see Mr. Ben Lewis. Are you on with us?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Well, Ben, tell us what your connection to the 10th Amendment Center is, what the 10th Amendment Center purports to do, and how our listeners can find more information about your project.
Sure. Well, thank you for having me on. The 10th Amendment Center was founded in 2006, and it was basically the brainchild of Michael Bolden, and he was, at the time, just living in Los Angeles and working out of his apartment, and was pretty much fed up with everything that he saw in the national political landscape. So if he did the studying that you and your co-hosts have also done, he came across the ideas of nullification and the Alien and Sedition Acts and all of the history of that. And he really landed on the idea that nullification is the, as Jefferson said, the rightful remedy. And so basically, and he started it by himself, the 10th Amendment Center, and has been working to grow the movement since then. And what we are is kind of a two-pronged organization. We support education on the amendment. And just in case anyone doesn't know, the 10th Amendment simply says that any power not delegated to the federal government by the Constitution and not any power not forbidden to the states is a power that remains with the states. So obviously that kind of that plays with the some of the things you've already said earlier in the show. So the 10th Amendment Center just works to educate people on what the 10th Amendment is, what it says, and what its implications are. And then as the organization has grown, it's developed into an activism organization as well, where we work with state and local volunteers and activists to influence state and local legislation that will push back against the federal government's unconstitutional laws.
So
So you basically do their homework for them, give them sample legislation that will address a particular issue, and they can, to use the common phrase, cut and paste that legislation and take it into their state representative and have him push that through the state legislature. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's correct. And we also provide, kind of as much support as we can give, at that level, because a lot of times the model legislation will have to go through tweaks and revisions to get to a point where the people in that particular state are comfortable with what it says.
Well, tell us about some of the nullification efforts nationwide that are starting to gain traction, if you will.
Sure, yeah. So I think when we have, when we talk about successes that the organization has, we have to kind of define success in a couple of different ways. So there's the way that we all want to see success, which is that the states rise up and understand that they have the balance of the power, meaning they have most of the power in the federal-state relationship under the Constitution. So, and that kind of manifests itself in passing legislation like we're talking about. So, on that front, there's been, interestingly, one of the issues that's been the biggest source of state pushback of the last 5 to 10 years has to do with marijuana. And there are probably probably half the states, close to half the states in the union now have legislation on the books that ignores federal laws on marijuana and either legalizes it for recreational use or for health-related issues. And this kind of gets to the essence of what we're about. And what I think what we're saying is, as an organization, it doesn't really matter what your personal opinion of drug use might be or marijuana itself. The fact is that the federal government has no authority to legislate on the issue at all. If it is to be legislated on, if it's to be denied or approved, it is a state issue. So we absolutely support the right of the states to make their own laws on this matter because it's their right. But if we look into other issues in the day, there are other issues too that have gained widespread kind of legislative success. Right to try laws, which is basically pushing back against the FDA's rules on what people with illnesses can try, what medications they can try. And then there was something in the late Bush administration called the Real ID Act that something like 38 or 40 states just completely ignored and said they weren't going to implement. So there have been successes along the way. Kind of a second level success is those big issues that we're working on that we haven't had legislative success on yet, at least not widespread legislative success. But we have helped change the conversation. So on those issues, NSA spying came out, the revelations came out a couple of years ago about what that all that entailed, and we have helped set the plan in motion of here's what states can do to stop the NSA from taking everybody's data and spying on everybody. And it just requires the states to say, we're not going to help you with, your facilities, or we're not going to allow this kind of anything that's any data that's collected by the NSA to be admissible in court and things like that. And then we have other issues like the Second Amendment Preservation Act, Obamacare legislation, and things like that. So those are all issues where we have not successfully pushed back to the point where we've gotten most of the states in the country to say no to this legislation, but we're helping to change that conversation. And I think the biggest thing that we're trying to do as an organization, and I think this has to come probably before the more widespread successes happen, is that we just have to educate people on what nullification is, and that it's not some crazy out there idea that originated out of nowhere. These are ideas that developed out of the Constitution, out of the ratification debates, in that the original, you know, the founding fathers, the people who were in the original federal government, at one point or another, all said, and the point was already made, even including Alexander Hamilton, they all said, when the federal government goes beyond its constitutional limits, it would be the right of the states to ignore them and to tell them to go away. If that was not made explicit the way it was, the Constitution itself would have never been ratified.
Well, I agree with you wholeheartedly that education is at the root of the problem here. We have to educate the people. We have to let them know what their remedies are, what even besides nullification, there are other remedies. And I applaud the 10th Amendment Center for their diligence in keeping this issue alive and pushing it into the states and encouraging state legislators to take this up, providing them with model legislation. I do want to point out that the 10th Amendment Center's website is a wonderful place to go for resources. If you're interested in more information, it's the 10th Amendment Center, all one word, .com. And there's some great essays out there. There are some great issue-related pages. So if there's a particular issue that you are interested in that you'd like to see addressed in a nullification manner, then you can provide information. You can get information on that and provide it to your state legislator, your state delegate, or a senator. So great work, and I applaud Michael for keeping this alive and the rest of the folks at the 10th Amendment Center. Thank you very much, Ben, for joining us. I know it's pretty early wherever you are. It's early enough here on the East Coast, but anywhere west of us, it becomes really early. So thanks for taking your time, and appreciate this rundown on what the 10th Amendment Center is doing. Any parting remarks for us?
No. This is a just listening to the first half hour, it was a great conversation, and I don't know that I would have said anything better than what you three have. So great job of teaching nullification and just continue to get the word out, because this is the remedy that Jefferson and the founding fathers had in mind.
Well, thanks again. Thanks once again. Have a wonderful day, and maybe we'll have you back on the show again when we address this again. I know it's an issue that we need to keep in front of the public. Well, let me take a few minutes here in the latter part of the show to put some things in perspective for our listeners. Nullification is important. Yes, it is an incredibly important concept, and it's important that people understand it completely and that the states consider this as a way of protecting themselves, their citizens, from the overreach of the federal government. But it's also important to realize there are some limitations that are part of the nullification landscape. First of all, and it's obvious, that a nullification effort by a particular state, say Wyoming, attempting to nullify federal gun laws or potential federal gun laws, if they pass that in Wyoming, it doesn't influence or protect me here in Virginia at all. So nullification is a state-by-state issue, and as Ben pointed out, the Real ID Act is one example of where a number of the states, perhaps 38 or 37 of them, I think, have nullified that, essentially nullified the Real ID Act. So the states can act in concert, but when they don't, it only influences the, or protects the citizens of a particular state. Nullification bills can be repealed by the next state legislature that takes the seat. So it's a very tentative measure, and it only exists as long as that state legislature wants to continue to push the issue. If a Republican-dominated legislature puts in place a nullification bill, and then at the next election in comes a Democratic-dominated legislature, they can repeal that nullification bill, and all that effort is for naught. Nullification, of course, leaves intact the underlying federal law.
So whereas we can say Virginia is not going to provide any of its state resources to allow the federal government to enforce this particular onerous law, nevertheless, the law is still on the books, and the federal government is free to enforce that law to the extent that its resources allow. So that's a very severe limitation as itself. As I said earlier, in Appleman versus Booth, 1859, the Supreme Court declared that nullification was an unconstitutional act. Now, we can demonstrate from the Constitution that statement is probably erroneous, and that there is a constitutional basis for nullification. So for the Supreme Court to come out and say otherwise, we can argue that point. And I think there's certainly great strength in the Tenth Amendment Center's position that nullification is a valid principle based on the Tenth Amendment and on natural law. But nevertheless, the Supreme Court has taken a different view, and so we have to contend with that. We can't just ignore it. There's another aspect of this that I'm sure David will appreciate my bringing up, and that is the issue of jury nullification. When a state government decides not to take the step of nullifying a federal act, the juries can do so on their own volition. Now, juries used to have this power in the United States. They don't as much today because of the way judges provide instructions to juries. But juries, particularly in the case of the Fugitive Slave Act, were routinely not rendering guilty verdicts of people who were clearly guilty of violating the Fugitive Slave Act, but the juries would refuse to provide guilty verdicts. Juries were in essence nullifying that federal law. So we have nullification at the state level, and we can have nullification at the local level by properly instructed juries. David, would you have anything to add to that?
Yes, and there's other examples in the history of our country. One of the most powerful ones is, our Constitution was amended. The 18th Amendment said that alcohol was prohibited from being produced, manufactured, transported, whatever. But because juries so regularly nullified that law, this is a constitutional law that, our Constitution was amended, but juries said, wait a minute, that's in violation of the laws of nature and nature's God. We know our Lord and Savior Jesus Christ turned water into wine, and therefore, why should the federal government tell us we can't do that? So they began to nullify so frequently that the 18th Amendment became unenforceable, and ultimately it was repealed as our Constitution was amended to completely get rid of it, and that was a victory for nullification.
Well, I should point out that the Institute on the Constitution has a wonderful course on jury nullification. And if you, our listeners, want more information about this, you can go out to the theamericanview.com and to their bookstore and find this course. It's very economical. It's certainly affordable by most folks. And you can buy this course, view it yourself, or sit around in your living room with a bunch of neighbors and go through this course. And then when you're called for jury duty, as happens from time to time, you will be properly equipped and empowered to take this issue into the jury box and inform your fellow jurors as to what their real power is under the Constitution. So it's a great example of nullification, a slightly different twist to that same concept. And I want to point out that people can learn more about it at the IOTC bookstore. Anything, Phil Duffy, anything to add to our discussion to this point?
Yeah, I'd just like to make the point that the effectiveness of nullification is very much dependent upon the issue. For example, I understand in the school desegregation issue that arose in Arkansas when Eisenhower sent in the 101st Airborne to enforce the federal law. Orville Faubus had resisted that. That was an act of nullification, if you will. But the federal government got its way. And I think the reason was that the other southern states in particular looked at the issue and said, there's a moral issue here as well. Do we really want to take on the federal troops? However, if you think in terms of the Affordable Care Act, what would happen if three distant states, geographically distant states, were to nullify? That would give an advantage to those states, perhaps drawing more people into those states who were against the Affordable Care Act. And if those states became more economically successful, that would undermine the entire Affordable Care Act. And so nullification could be very, very effective in a situation like that. It's very much dependent upon the issue, and I think the morality and the constitutionality of the issues.
Well, great. And I mean, that's a great rundown, and I'm glad you brought up those other circumstances or examples of nullification, because it is an issue that we've had from time to time ever since we went under the Constitution in 1788. So it is an issue that's not going to go away. It's certainly an appropriate remedy, and more states need to consider this. But I will point out, on Wednesday's Fairfax Free Citizen, there was an essay that caught my eye where a lady, Judy Keller, was attempting to say that instead of a convention of the states, we should use nullification. That is, it's an either-or situation. We shouldn't pursue the Article 5 amendment process, and instead we should nullify. I would point out, and as I did in a responding essay, that this isn't an either-or situation. There are a lot of remedies for federal overreach. Nullification is certainly one of them, but nullification is not a panacea. It is not going to correct every problem we have. It certainly isn't. There's no way to nullify an omnibus spending bill, for instance. So nullification is not going to repeal the 17th Amendment. Nullification is not going to clarify the Commerce Clause. So there's a number of problems that we still face that cannot be resolved by nullification. And so, as I pointed out in my Constitutional Corner essay this week, that we need to be considering every remedy, educating the people, nullifying, pursuing amendments through an Article 5 convention. All these are absolutely necessary. So that brings us up to the kind of the end point for nullification, unless David or Phil want to bring up any final points. I'll give you each an opportunity to chime in here.
Thank you, Gary. Let me just say that nullification is one step on the road that our founders had to follow when they founded our republic. They began by opposing and protesting the Olive Branch petition to the king and so on. Ultimately, that led to them saying, you know, the acts of the king are null and void, and we are separating from the king. So there's nullification, there's interposition where the government, the lesser magistrate, stands against the higher magistrate when he violates the law. But the ultimate end, if those things are not resolved, and we may be headed there as a country because of all the overreach of the federal government, the ultimate end is that the people, we the people, say this government no longer protects our God-given rights, and as our declaration says, we have a God-given right, therefore, to alter and to abolish this government. In fact, the declaration implies it's a duty to alter and abolish a government that will not protect our God-given rights.
Absolutely. Phil, anything to add in about 20 seconds?
Yeah, I'd just like to call attention to a slide that I use in my Constitution class, in which Boris Karloff is strapped to a table, and he has somebody in a white outfit next to him. And the question is basically, who is Frankenstein? And everybody says the person in on the table. And the real answer is, of course, no. It was Dr. Frankenstein who created the monster. The states have created the federal government, and they brought it into existence, and they certainly could take it out of existence if they wish to. But that is the issue. The states have created the partnership, if you will. And nullification is part of that process of controlling the federal government that they have created.
Great, great addition, and thank you for that comment. I want to point our listeners to some upcoming events. On Friday, September 11th, the Institute on the Constitution in Pasadena, Maryland, is going to host Pastor David Whitney. who will speak on is a Article 5 convention the last hope for America or a dangerous idea? And we know there, I think we know where that discussion is going, but I encourage you to hear both sides of this issue, and David certainly has an appropriate view of this. There's a charge of $10 per person to go to their classroom or to view it via their webcast. So if you want to register for that event, go to theamericanview.com. On the 17th of September, which everyone should recognize as Constitution Day, Foundation for American Christian Education's Lessons in Liberty series is hosting Dr. Herb Titus, former dean of the Regent University Law School, who's going to speak on what should Christians do about the Obergefell versus Hodges decision. For that event, there's a nominal charge of $5 to attend, either on-site or via livestream.com, and to register, go to www.face.net. And finally, on the 19th of September, 2 days later, the Constitution Leadership Initiative is sponsoring a seminar for youth here in York County, Virginia, based on the book by Juliet Turner, Our Constitution Rocks. And for more information on that, send me an email at gary@constitutionleadership.org. Well, let me leave you with this quote. John Stuart Mill said, "A people may prefer a free government, but if from indolence or carelessness or cowardice or want of public spirit they are unequal to the exertions necessary for preserving it, if they will not fight for it when directly attacked, they are more or less unfit for liberty." So the question I'll leave our viewers with, are you fit for liberty? See you next week on We the People, the Constitution Matters.
Hi, I'm Hans Tenbaum with Valley Forge Piece of Repair. I offer affordable and expert computer repair services. Deal with a locally owned business who cares more about their clients' needs. The services provided include virus removal, repair, cleanups, tune-ups, tutoring, consulting, and other computer services. Most services can be done at a flat rate. Senior citizens mentioned WFIL receive a 10% discount. Call me at 610-462-3210 for more information.
ShopRite of Hatfield is American-owned, locally operated grocer. We support veterans and seniors by giving 5% discounts. Just bring in your ID. Download the ShopRite mobile app to enjoy weekly savings, coupons, recipes, and so much more. ShopRite of Hatfield, 170 40-foot road, open 7 days a week, 7 a.m. to 11 p.m.
ShopRite, we're all about food, savings, and you.
We the People t-shirts, where freedom is always in style. Famous quotes from patriots throughout U.S. history printed on the back of our t-shirts. We do over 25 quotes in a variety of colors. High-quality t-shirts with a meaningful message that make people think. Encourage others by reminding them about patriots of conviction who have gone before us. Order directly from wethepeopletshirts.us. For more information, call 757-645-8878.